Okay, welcome back. And the holidays mean nothing in terms of corrupt, evil, satanic medical science plotting and planning to do away with much of our species. They haven't missed a step, believe it. The biolab work going on in a lot of different places, paid for by American tax dollars and other people, is nonstop. They're not joking. They're trying very hard to get bird flu over to P2P, person-to-person transmission, and they'll probably get there. It's just a matter of time. I would suggest they already have it on the shelf, and they'll turn it loose whenever they want. They've succeeded in now getting it to spread through a number of different animal species which never before got the avian influenza. And yes, there are such things as viruses out there for you. Virus deniers, turn over a new leaf and try and figure it out this year, all right? The earth is not flat and there are viruses. Hello, young lady. How are you in 2025?
Well, so far so good.
Yeah, you sound good. You sound good. You ought to hear her off the air. You sound great. I'm just kidding. Oh, she sounds sweet on the air. She's intolerably sweet off the air. How's that? All right. Okay.
I'm minding now, my manners now.
Yes, you are. A lot of people very worried about this bird flu. There are apparently a number of, I would have to say, non-tested, what would you call them? I guess they're going to call them vaccines again for bird flu on the shelf, ready to go. They're ready to roll this thing out big time. It's not yet in people to the extent that it's being spread P2P, person to person. But I think that's going to happen very soon. Total so far of known cases, allegedly in human beings, about 65, something like that. Attorney Tom Renz has been on this. mRNA bird flu shots are on the shelf, he says, ready to roll out. And I agree with that. I think this is all planned, just like the COVID issue. Will this be as hideous as the COVID injections, the vaccines? I don't see how it could be any worse. The COVID killer with the spike protein and the simple fact that, and Erica was one of the first people on the planet to point to the fact that the microbiome in your digestive tract, once you've been infested with the virus itself or possibly shed upon, and the spike gets into your bacteria, the bacteria begin to manufacture spike. So you're in deep trouble. How do you get your microbiome flushed out of your system and completely rebuilt properly and appropriately to stop the production of spike? You don't. Once you're infested with that and your microbiome, your biota, your bacteria are producing spike, good luck. Good luck.
Yeah, that's right. That's an ongoing concern. You know, and we don't know if this type of alteration to the gut microbiome is the reason people keep producing spike. I mean, we do have some evidence now that there is integration into the person's genome, their own DNA, that keeps
this
it going.
This is really bad. Just spend a little more time on that. The idea that this does integrate and then go to the injection itself, and I repeat, we've repeated this forever. In each injection, there are up to 400 billion pieces of viable DNA. What does that DNA code for, as it were? What does it do? We don't know, but with up to 400 billion, it seems like the sky's the limit. And they used to try to tell us, oh, it's just a contaminant. No, it's part of the death potion. They put it in there, and it will integrate into your DNA permanently. You are now a different genetic being.
But that's separate and apart from the RNA and messenger
Correct.
RNA transcripts that
Absolutely.
Can be reverse transcribed and also inserted into the person's DNA. So it's a genetic catastrophe, really. And then we have to be concerned with what's happening with the microbiome. And is it being integrated there as well? And if so, what is the microbiome or how is the microbiome responding? Is it producing noxious proteins, spike proteins, conotoxins, and venom-like peptides? So there's still quite a bit that we can speculate about that seems
true.
To be, you know, seems to merit some, you know, conjecture. But I don't know. You know, now to entertain the thought of another mRNA platform for another virus that's really of no concern at this point as far as humans go.
Unless
and didn't they just stop? Moderna was had the their RSV.
They stopped their trials.
Yeah, because, well, it wasn't going well, I suppose. But we already have a bird flu, H5N1 bird flu vaccine available. It's an inactivated traditional type vaccine. It's been on the shelf, I think, since 2010?
Long time.
20, yeah. Quite a while. Maybe, well, I don't know. I'm losing track of time. But that's ready to go. But nonetheless, Moderna was awarded $176 million this past summer to develop an mRNA version of the bird flu vaccine.
We don't need an mRNA version of any vaccine.
No. That's a toxic platform, if not outright lethal.
Thank you.
And then don't forget we have that Arcturus, which is a biotechnology company that has made a self-amplifying RNA vaccine for COVID. And it's currently available in Japan, and they are trialing one for bird flu here in the U.S.
Understand what self-amplifying means. It's not turning up the volume. It means replicating.
It has the ability to copy itself, so you don't need nearly as much of messenger RNA. This thing is just a little strand of RNA that has an enzyme in it that allows it to copy itself. And it can keep copying itself if the host is unable to shut it down. It will go on indefinitely, and it also runs the risk of recombining with other viruses that may be present in the host.
Oh, and so, you know, when you think of bacteria and how they love to swap genetic information amongst themselves.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this.
Well,
this,
viruses
you say,
do it too.
Yes, they do. I was getting there. When you say this is a catastrophe, you're not overstating anything. This is they've opened the door to the end of the species. It could be taken down right now. There's so many different pathways that they could destroy virtually as many as they want, and that's what they're doing. That's exactly what they appear to be doing.
They're ensuring that it is passed down, at least to some extent, in future generations. The fact that these lipid nanoparticles and their payload end up in the reproductive organs should have everybody concerned.
All right, so let's just real quick cite the work of the late, great, great Arne Burkhardt, pathologist for, 50 years? I don't know what it was, something like that. And he made it quite clear that both in females and males, but he specialized in males in terms of his autopsy work, and he found that in males that were autopsied after taking the jab, he found zero spermatozoa left in the testes, gone. And what was there in the place of the spermatozoa? Wall-to-wall spike protein. Do you get it? That's almost like getting an injection, so to speak, of pure spike protein from your partner.
And don't forget, it was also found in the breast milk of nursing mothers.
Green breast milk.
Yeah, in some cases it was green, and nobody quite knows why that is. There's been some speculation on it. One researcher, Jeff Payne in Australia, said that it's the result of endotoxin. I'm not sure I'm ready to believe
I have an
that.
Idea.
I think it's copper, frankly.
I was just going to say that. I said, I have an idea. Why couldn't it be copper? And
right,
you've been
because
on
the
copper?
Spike binds to copper,
yes,
and, you know, copper has a bluish-greenish tint when it's oxidized, and because we're finding spike in breast milk, why wouldn't we find copper there along with it?
Absolutely. All right, let's jump into listening to a few minutes of Tom Renz on the Bright Eon page, and he's talking about mRNA bird flu shots being on the shelf and ready, as we've just mentioned a few minutes ago, to roll out. Here we go. This is Attorney Tom Renz.
We spent $176 million with Moderna this summer to basically pay them to build up their manufacturing capacity for a vaccine that hasn't even been approved. This was prior to even starting phase three clinical trials. We spent...
I hope you heard what he just said. Prior to even starting phase three, they were given $176 million to increase production of something that hasn't even been certified as safe? Good luck.
$76 million with them, right? Mm-hmm. So now understand something. These haven't even undergone phase three clinical trials. Why is that important? The testing process has really been a disaster. So first of all, understand all mRNA is gene therapy. Okay, gene therapy, and let me explain to you why, because...
It should not be called therapy, it's gene disruption. It's damaging, it's completely disorganizing and reformatting your genetic material to one degree or another.
Experts will say, no, it's not. Okay, mRNA is genetic material. You are injecting mRNA into your arm for a therapeutic purpose. How is that not gene therapy? It's absolutely gene therapy, right? And whether it integrates into your DNA or not, something that we're now finding out that they did because SV40 contamination is less relevant than whether or not it is a gene therapy by definition. It is. Now, we know because I have the FDA documents that show that with gene therapies, there is the potential for what's called a delayed adverse event, delayed adverse reactions. That means that 3, 5, 10 years down the road, you can get, according to the FDA, autoimmune disorders. Mm. You can get issues with cancer, all sorts of different things. To them,
issues with cancer. How about dead from cancer? Come on, Tom. Let's hit the nail on the head. Dead from cancer, all kinds of immunological destruction. These mRNA things are insane. They're not compatible with the continued flourishing of a species on planet Earth.
Being able to get away with their lies about this being an emergency is that everybody starts getting PCR tests again. If they PCR test everything, the thing about PCR is if you run it at a high enough cycle threshold, you'll find anything you want to find.
Sure.
They admitted that. We found that during COVID. So they can find exposure to anything they want to find if they run a certain type of PCR test at a certain type of cycle threshold. So they want testing because then they can say, there's 100 million cases of the bird flu. We're all going to die. And everybody that dies, they can label a bird flu death, just like they did with COVID. Then they can try and mandate the flu vaccines. Now, this is where it becomes really insidious. The law around COVID vaccines is different than the law around flu vaccines because there were no COVID vaccines 10 years ago. Flu vaccines have been out for a long time. And the crooks at the Biden FDA have for the last several years been trying to kind of mesh the authorization for the flu vaccine with the authorization for mRNA. Because if they have an mRNA flu vaccine, they're going to try and say that that they can mandate it in the same way that they used to be able to traditionally mandate flu vaccines. And under the law, there are certain situations where, for example, healthcare workers and stuff, they've got a lot of latitude to try and force those vaccines on these traditionally licensed and authorized vaccines. So they're trying to mesh this and get this into the flu vaccine so that they can get away with trying to use the law for a traditional vaccine to mandate this mRNA poison because they want to force it in everybody's arm.
Okay, hope you got that loud and clear. They want to put mRNA in every human being. Why? Because it will shorten their lives at the very least, if not bring them to a quick conclusion. No joke. That's what we're up against now. Don't look to the big screen to tell you the truth. It's not going to happen. Everything's controlled. Everything. You have no idea how controlled you are. Some of you do. I'm being a little facetious here. But the amount of control, cradle to grave, and grave comes very quickly now for many people, is absolutely stupendous. It's that big. All right, there's Tom Renz. Anything you want to add to that? He did mention that bird flu was 65 total cases. Let me play just a little bit more of this, and hold
okay.
on. Hold on a second. Got to get past the commercial.
Chase Geiser, your host today on the Alex Jones Show. Before
all right.
The War Room begins at 3 p.m., I believe Maria Z is going to be hosting the War Room. I am joined by the esteemed Thomas Renz. Mr. Renz's experience with the law began with his mentor, Nuremberg prosecutor and celebrated international lawyer Henry T. King, Jr. Renz has won the National Trailblazer Award for political action, assisting in numerous state and national legislative and regulatory reforms. Thomas Renz is the lead attorney in several major cases brought in Ohio, New Mexico, Maine, and nationally against the CDC, DHHS, and even Anthony Fauci regarding forced vaccine mandates, big tech censorship, COVID-19 lockdowns, mask mandates, business closures, false PCR data, fraudulent death numbers.
I hope he has his life insurance paid up. Tom is walking on the edge, no doubt. All right, here we go. Let me move this up to where he's starting. There, I think that's it.
Pandemic, right? So you had $14 trillion with a T that changed hands in the United States alone from COVID. Nobody's gone to jail yet, and nothing truly has been done to stop it. Now, I think that's about to change with this new administration. But until there's some accountability and some truth out there, you can bank on the fact they're going to continue. I want to read you this. This is from Governor Gavin Newsom, who we all love. I say that jokingly.
Of course.
Newsom declared an emergency in California over the bird flu. Nationally, there are a grand total of 65 cases of bird flu in humans. Basically, what we're seeing is 65 cases, one hospitalization, that's it. Mm-hmm. Newsom is declaring an emergency. Why? Well, let me read you from his, this is from his emergency declaration. Quote, to date, no person-to-person spread of bird flu has been detected in California, and nearly all infected individuals had exposure to infected cattle. Okay, so basically, the bird flu is a non-issue, but he's declaring an emergency. Meanwhile, you've got Deborah Birx out there and Leanna Wen out there talking about, well, we need to be testing. Well, let's go back to COVID because we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We can tell you why. They want mass PCR testing. PCR testing cannot diagnose a disease. We learned that during COVID. It was in court. We've put it everywhere. It's indisputable. You cannot diagnose disease with a PCR test. All you can do is see whether or not there's a certain level of viral load in a person's blood, right? So yeah, what's the viral load in a person's blood? But that doesn't mean they're sick. It could be part of a virus. It could be broken. It could be damaged. There's just genetic fragments of material in the blood. So PCR testing does nothing, but it allows the government to fraudulently, in my opinion, call something a case. They need mass testing so they can claim that there are all these cases of bird flu to justify emergencies, to justify lockdowns, to justify masks, and most importantly, to justify them giving authorization to untested and unproven mRNA vaccines that will do the same thing or worse than the COVID vaccines.
Okay, there you go. mRNA attached to the title or name of a vaccine means potential death, all right? Or certainly an expedited lifespan. It's going to be much shorter. All right, there's Tom Renz, and there's the bird flu update. So don't panic. And just also when you're scanning the news headlines on the site and hopefully other places as well, keep in mind that there's an obvious and overt war on your food in this country. The idea of another million chickens are going to be killed in southern Ohio because they allege that one chicken had bird flu. I think it's a lot of garbage, frankly. So many food recalls, salmonella, listeria in the last couple of months. I've never seen more in my life. So they are really working very hard to disrupt in a very major way the food supply, which sustained life in this country. All right. Any other remark on this one?
Yeah, it is true, and I don't know if it's worth mentioning again that the pork that has been injected with mRNA now for since 2017, I think.
Yes.
So that's been happening, and I, you know, what the long term consequences of that for consumers are, we don't know, because it's been, well, it's been done on the sly, and people have been eating it not knowing it. But the concern here, I would say, it's not messenger mRNA; it's a self amplifying RNA that they're injecting these pigs with.
This came out of Japan. This whole the big push came out of Japan. The original I can't remember the
Sequivity. That's Merck.
Sequivity.
That's not Arcturus. Merck uses a capsid delivery system for this RNA. So they're not using the lipid nanoparticles. They're using a type of emulsion. Now, does it stay at the injection site? I don't know. But apparently, it's okay to use in pigs. They're not losing enough pigs to call it off. But the concern here with this type of transfection technology, which is, you know, you're telling the body to produce a foreign protein that's associated with a disease. So when you do that, you know, as we've seen with people, you when you inject the mRNA for the spike protein, what does that allow? It allows them to tolerate the disease, in addition to producing in their tissues this poisonous protein. So in the case of the swine, this particular vaccine that they've been using, I think it's only one, which is for one for swine flu specifically. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they've targeted other diseases with this technology, but they're going to for sure. But so what does that protein do? Has it been tested in humans? Is it allergenic? Is it immunogenic? Is it prionogenic? In other words, is it prion-like? I mean, we just because it's a, you know, gene transfection does not mean that, you know, what's being produced is prions, but then again, it could. We don't know. And on top of that, again, you know, you're supposedly protecting an animal from contracting a disease when all it's doing is allowing the animal to harbor a disease. So not only are we getting meat with foreign proteins, but we're also eating potentially diseased animals. Not that there isn't a lot of disease in these, you know, these facilities anyway, these operations.
Oh, the factory farming of animals is
they're just pumped full of antibiotics and of all kinds. So, you know,
75% of the antibiotics here go to animals.
And they are
75.
Still viable when we eat them, if we eat them.
Yes,
but as if you didn't need another reason not
that.
To eat pigs. I mean, pigs are a host to something like 600 parasites, 42 of which cannot be cooked out. So, you know, we really...
I hadn't heard that one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, they're renowned. You know, every major religion forbids eating pork.
Right. Well, there's a reason. So, and cannibals say it tastes exactly like human flesh.
Yeah, it's not a flesh that or a type of meat that humans are really intended to eat. You know, it's...
There's a lot of bacon lovers listening. Be careful out there.
I know. I'm just, you know, providing some awareness that...
Look, it's true. It's true. 40 of them can't be cooked out. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yep. So.
All right. We've got another section as we run through our information. So we could do 2 hours here easily. Information stockpile for you that... Erica puts together, she goes through all these groups and picked up this one thread that's very interesting. It has to do with demonic possession, or certainly feelings and fears thereof, amongst the vaxxed. Okay? If you're ready, jump into number one there, and I'll follow along. Very strange. All right, go ahead.
And this is from a vax-injured person. I don't know if this is relevant or appropriate to post, but I just remembered two feelings that came over me from the COVID shots within days of taking them. One feeling was that I didn't feel exactly sick like I usually did from flu shots. I realized the closest thing I could make of the feeling was that it felt more like I was poisoned. The other feeling I had and please forgive me for sounding absolutely crazy, was that it felt like another being of some sort had possessed my body, like in the movie The Exorcist.
That's not the first time we've come across that. People sensing there's something different, literally, about their person, their being, after taking these shots. Go ahead with the next one. Carry on.
All right. There were a long, long list of people that chimed in. This person says, yep, I actually thought, quote, my body will never be mine again. And
my,
original
that's fascinating.
Replies,
Hold on. That's fascinating. I actually thought my body will never be my own again. Now, that's really creepy stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, original poster replies, I really felt like there was another living being other than me in my body. I've heard these vaccines can be contaminated with DNA. Maybe that's what I was experiencing, some foreign DNA. And the other person replies, I understand that sensation. I got the J&J, so I'm not sure if it's the same, but I definitely felt I would never be the same. Now, let me say, that was my first vax as an adult. I never got flu, shingles, none of them, but I bought into the fear this time, but immediately felt a total body shift, maybe like you say, an actual inhabitant.
Go ahead.
Gotta
There's
be creepy.
Two more on that page. Yeah,
next
very,
one.
Very.
Third person says, me too, as soon as it hit me, 15 minutes later. And another one? Yep, felt like I was poisoned within hours. I felt this flushing sensation from head to toe and remember looking at my husband and saying, I'd better lay down. I don't feel right. I felt absolutely delirious. I just asked him to check on me. Next thing I remember is waking up the next day, thank God, and having horrible head pressure, which lasted for 6 months.
6 months. All right, the next person replies to this thread, it is really hard for me to remember exactly what I felt like, but I do remember a week in, I was hell-bent on going to an arts event. Specifically for anyone in the know about what this is, it's to see a new cranky. Baltimore is home to some of the most talented cranky makers. End parenthesis. I don't know what cranky is. I know what it is, but I don't know what art cranky is. At any rate, she wanted to go. My fever had been down for days, and I really wanted to go. And so I got up out of bed, got myself dressed, put on a coat, and walked out the door. I knew I felt completely unable to go to an event, but again, it wasn't a fever. It wasn't a familiar feeling at all. I just knew I couldn't go. I walked back into the apartment, took off my coat, and went straight back to bed. I got a much better understanding of what was going on when I reconnected with an old acquaintance who, since I last saw him decades earlier, had become a toxicologist. His studies, and he studies, internally generated carbon monoxide. CO, carbon monoxide, is a gastrotransmitter, a gas-based neurotransmitter that is part of the heme oxygenase pathway, which is activated both with fever and with vaccination and some other stressors as well. CO, carbon monoxide, shouldn't be confused with CO2. Most people are familiar with CO exposure from external sources, and not all are aware of the internal production of carbon monoxide. We do produce it, and most people don't know it. All right, back to this. It's worth looking at the longest list of carbon monoxide symptoms you can find to see how many symptoms correspond with vax injury. One more thing I want to mention, that my friend, the toxicologist, was a featured guest on a podcast. I think it was This American Life. It was an episode that started with a haunted house report that turned out to likely be carbon monoxide. Your mention of the possession and the exorcist reminds me of that. There are ways you can measure carbon monoxide in your breath easier than the complex venous and arterial blood draws which are used to do exactly that. All right, that's another one. Go ahead.
Yeah, we did, back in February of 2024, we did a couple programs on this, basically an auto intoxication with your own internally produced carbon monoxide that comes when you break down heme. And this was the, I wouldn't say it's a theory. It was actually talked about quite a bit at the beginning of the pandemic when people were succumbing to this virus and ending up in the hospital. And many physicians remarked that this looks like carbon monoxide poisoning. And in fact, these people did have elevated levels of carbon monoxide in their blood.
Yeah.
So that was one of the theories as well as to why smokers had better outcomes. I wouldn't say they were less frequently infected, but they had better outcomes if they did get infected with the virus. It's thought that because there is so much carbon monoxide produced as a result of the heme breaking down, that smokers were better adapted to deal with higher than average levels of carbon monoxide. Because, you know, if you're a regular smoker, you are exposing yourself to, fairly significant levels of carbon monoxide that non-smokers don't have. And that's, it's actually protective, believe it or not. It protects from oxidative stress.
Uh-huh.
But there's a point where it's, you know, it does more harm than good. It's not supposed to be sky high for long periods of time. But, you know, in for a short period of time at low levels, it protects against oxidative stress and, you know.
Got it. All right.
Everything that comes along with it. And if you cannot produce carbon monoxide through this process, that's really bad because it's a defense mechanism against the oxidative stress. And then if you can't mm-hmm. do it, then. And there are people, you get poisoned by your own heme. And that's a whole other story.
That is. We've covered that too. All right, take the next one, and we'll do one more after that, I think.
Okay, another person says, that's very similar to what happened to me. I felt like I had been poisoned and also had head pressure that lasted for 5 months. Another one says, I had head pressure that lasted months, too, followed by a swishing in my head for months. Every once in a while, the swishing comes back. It's traumatizing. And another, I had the head pressure as well, lasted for 8 months. It was awful.
Huh.
And another, I felt poisoned too. Within 2 days, I woke up involuntarily vomiting, coughing, and retching so violently I collapsed at the wheel of my car as I was on the way to the ER. I got as far as my daughter's house, 4 blocks away. Whatever poison junk was in that vial caused my body to vomit violently. And the action caused costochondritis, according to my PCP. He told me my cartilage had been torn away from the rib cage next to my heart muscle. I was incredulous. I had never heard of anything like this. He said it would take at least 6 months to heal. He lied. Fast forward 44 months. It still hurts. Just not as extreme. It's more tolerable now. I drink anti-inflammatory herbs constantly to help. This was one, but only one of many problems. Shaking my head.
I never would have figured that. It says SMH. Good job. All right. I read these cold. I don't see them before. SMH. That would have thrown me, and everyone would have been laughing at me again. All right. Next one. Yep, I felt like my brain was hacked and no longer in my control. I would look around like I was constantly drawing blanks, and something in my brain was multiplying, sort of like a computer program. And someone adds to that, my vision was like looking at a pixelated screen, and I thought it was a reflection of what was happening to my blood being curdled by something. I have felt out of my body ever since. Another one, my body felt like a circuit board with a series of wires misfiring and malfunctioning. Every week or day, I was feeling different. And an add to that, yes, but I believe it was to do with the neuroinflammation. I definitely recovered a lot from the initial onset. I recall telling friends that I felt like I had no feelings anymore. That's weird. Like a robot, I guess. And another, it's not possession, but it's an infestation. That's my EMF meter. It's pointed at my deltoid. The higher it goes, the worse I feel. When it's absent, I feel great. I felt poisoned, too. In fact, I started looking at my initial symptoms, and they looked like acute lead poisoning. All right, and the last one here is one shorty. It says, a friend trying to explain to me described it like spiritual robbery. Now, these are all post-vax reactions in this particular thread. Some view it as satanic in nature, but it's very unpleasant. The range of fallout from these shots covers a multitude of different kinds of symptomology. This is just one of them. If there's any more you want to do, go ahead. You know this thread. I don't.
Okay, a couple more here. My reaction started 14 days later. I was told the vax wouldn't kick in for around 2 weeks, and that's when my nightmare began. Another person says, it's not crazy at all. The last 3.5 years, I've had the experience on and off since the day I was injured of feeling like I was sure I was dying, and then thinking I must be insane, and that I would sound crazy if I tried explaining that to anyone. Right. But in fact, there have been on and off periods where I have, in fact, been dying. And I was not at all crazy, despite the ER doctor lying in my charts and UCLA trying to cover up all sorts of things. Eventually, tests showed how very ill I was, and my weight was so low at one point my organs were shutting down. I already had lupus, and it was mild and in remission, and now it's very serious, and I have to take an immunosuppressant drug, which is a chemo drug. So, no feeling possessed isn't a strange description at all, because I haven't felt like myself in several years, and I, on and off, just start dying. So, I think many of us can validate that this poison hijacked our bodies, and we haven't been the same since.
It's very creepy. Very creepy.
I mean, we have countless more of these. You know, it's just...
Yeah.
And it's the same theme.
Right.
So if you think about it, I mean, it is a violation of a person's
their
DNA.
Your sanctity is being ravaged. It's being invaded, violated. These shots get right into your consciousness and begin to play big games with it, obviously.
Everything about this is so barbaric and unnatural.
It's genocide. They're not doing this to help people. There's nothing helpful about this. Nothing. It's utterly destructive. And on a myriad of different canvases. It's not just one. It runs and runs. All right. We're going to move on to Dr. Christina Parks. We have had her on via video a number of times. Very smart lady. Go ahead and set this up real quick, and we'll jump right in.
Yeah, okay. So Christina Parks, she's not a practicing physician, although she has a PhD in microbiology.
Right.
She did an interview with Steve Kirsch not too long ago, a couple weeks, and they were discussing the significance of this DNA contamination in the vials.
Now, that goes back again, DNA plasmids, up to 400 billion of them per injection. Pieces of viable DNA being crammed into your system, in addition to everything else we've talked about. Yeah.
We've got the chopped up DNA, which we call linearized DNA, and that is ripe for integration. That can go right in and insert itself in your DNA randomly. You know, I don't believe there's any instruction as to where it's going to go in. And the danger of that is that, when it does that, it can turn genes off and turn genes on. So it will change your genetic expression.
It'll change your whole life in some cases. Yes.
Well, I mean, the body has ways of dealing with that. It just, where is it being inserted? Can it be corrected?
With 400 billion
it's a non-dividing cell,
pieces.
It doesn't have the ability to correct it.
Okay,
it can silence
good,
it, but it can't cut it out and correct it. So, but the second concern, and this is a concern for anybody really who hasn't been vaxxed, is the DNA plasmids, which, yes, those can go into a cell, human cell, and sit there and disrupt its genetic expression, but it can also be uptaken by bacteria and basically genetically modify your bacteria to start producing spike protein. And
so we talked about, you were the first to mention that in all the programs I've ever seen. You were the first. I think you even started out saying it. What if it gets into the digestive microbiome, the bacteria, and starts to reprogram the bacteria to manufacture it?
You've got bacteria in on you. You have a skin microbiome. You have a microbiome in all of your orifices and your digestive tract. And there's more of them than there are of you. And so if this DNA plasmid is being uptaken by your bacteria...
Good luck.
We already have evidence that Parkinson's can develop as a result of things going on in the microbiome, bacteria producing noxious proteins that are able to translocate into the central nervous system and then make their way to the brain. We have some evidence that that's true for ALS. And, of course, we have evidence that CJD can start that way, too, from eating infected meat with prions in it that gets into the digestive tract. And you've got an entire nervous system called the enteric nervous system that basically lines your intestines. So it's very easy for things from the intestinal tract to gain access to your nervous system.
I agree. The first time I heard that they had an unknown number of DNA plasmids in each injection, and they were mumbling about contamination, I'm not a scientist, but it made no sense to me that that would accidentally be in there. And then we started hearing numbers, up to 400 billion pieces. Oh, it's crazy. All right, here's Dr. Christina Parks talking about integration and the issue of these DNA plasmids. Are we ready?
Yep.
People about what's going on. And so this is a pre-record, so I'm assuming that that her bio has already been read and so forth, so we know who she is. So I'm going to just jump right into it, which is, should we be worried, and how much should we be worried?
We should be worried, and we should be really, really worried. Some people have been like, oh, you're just trying to be an alarmist to like sell something or whatever. And I think people who know me know I am not an alarmist. And this is the time to be alarmed.
And so what should we be alarmed about? And like, what's the sort of the worst that could happen here? And what's the best that could happen? Like, give me the worst case, best case. If you were to,
okay, I'll
to inform
take
our listeners, like, how bad could it be? And what does bad actually mean?
I'm going to take the best case first. The best case is this theoretical concern, which seems to be an actual concern, and that's what Kevin McKernan's work is showing, that it is either not a concern or it is so only isolated to just one or two people or something that it's not happening widely. Worst case scenario, this is happening widely. There is a self-replicating infectious agent that is driving cancer, that is colonizing the nose, throat, and guts of everybody, vaccinated or unvaccinated, producing the spike protein, which is getting into your cells, into the bacteria cells, into your cells, mutating your cells, driving cancer, spreading throughout your body, causing inflammation. And also that it's in bacteria, so it's making any kind of bacterial infection extremely, extremely inflammatory. So now...
Let me remind you that the mRNA goes into your cell. It's got an LNP to help it get into your cell. It orders your cell genetically to stop producing all the worthy and useful proteins it used to produce and only produce spike protein. That's pathway number one of spike introduction to the body. Your body produces it through your own cells. Number two, if the spike goes into the bacteria in your digestive tract and orders that bacteria to reconfigure itself to begin to produce spike proteins, there's pathway number two that you're getting spiked all the time from within your own body.
They have like pneumonia on steroids. So infectious cancer is the worst case scenario.
And there's basically nothing you can do about it other than isolate yourself from all humanity. It's not just like isolating yourself from vaccinated people. You would basically have to like totally isolate yourself from other human beings.
Right. There is absolutely something you can do about it. That's why I speak out. I'm not here to, but yeah, isolating yourself from other humans is not really going to be the right approach. I mean, obviously, if you have somebody that is very sensitive, isolating them to some degree may be beneficial, especially when stuff is going around. But in the end, most of us have to really be proactive about our health, and we can discuss some ways to do that. So I don't know if you want to discuss what is actually going on, why this is inherent to the technology, the difference between Moderna and Pfizer. So if you want to discuss the science first about that, or what people can do, you know, we can.
Let's cut right to the chase. What can people do to protect themselves or to minimize the risk?
So I want to highlight that this is the work of Dr. Robin Rose, who I think is probably a world leader in spike detox. And getting the spike out of your body is actually pretty complicated. On my website, which is vita.org, vi-ta.org, I do have a video that kind of goes through it step by step because it is kind of complicated. But for the average person, I'm going to talk about some things that work and some things that we need to have the option to work. First of all, we've got to bind spike protein in the gut. If either, you know, a lot of people have subclinical gut infections with COVID. Other people maybe have these bacteria that have plasmids for the spike protein. In any case, we've got to bind the spike protein in the gut. And I think one of the best binders is fucoidin, which is from bladderwrack. It's a sulfated polysaccharide. I don't need to get all into that. But it's healthy. It feeds your gut microbiome. It heals the gut. And again, this is the work of Dr. Robin Rose. It binds the virus and the spike protein very, very tightly. And so it can prevent it from getting into the rest of your body or causing problems in the gut.
And the product she's talking about is Fucoidin, F-U-C-O-I-D-E-N.
A-N.
That was my second guess.
We've mentioned that a couple times.
You have.
In the past.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fucoidin. F-U-C-O-I-D-A-N. Fucoidin. It's a derivative of seaweed.
Yep, right. Brown seaweed, yep.
So your gut health dealing with this fucoidin. Some other things, there are different...
Wait. Before you move on, where do I get that? Can I buy it on Amazon?
I cannot recommend a product on Amazon. I do recommend a couple of things in my spike detox product.
Okay, that's Steve Kirsch asking the question. He's never heard of fucoidin. If he'd been listening to us, he would have. Long time ago. All right, here.
Which is just different elements. I'm not a doctor, so I don't say do this, do that. I'm just saying here are some things that you want to consider. So I would go on Amazon and I'd have to choose. So you might want to get with your practitioner, get with a reputable supplement brand to get fucoidin. It should be pretty simple to isolate it from seaweed.
Okay, we'll have to stop there for this visit. Fucoidin, it's a very important to help reduce the effect of spike. I mean, the idea of reducing the amount of spike in your body is very salutary. That's good. But you have to get to the source. You've got to get to those cells that have been taken over by the mRNA and the bacteria in your digestive tract, all of that bacteria, which in most adults ranges anywhere from 5 to 7 pounds worth. And you've got to replace it all. How the hell you do that?
Well, we just hope that not every species of bacteria becomes transfected or infected with this plasmid.
There are hundreds and maybe thousands of different ones in there, yes. But it's spread all over the place, so I don't know to what extent
that's happening. So, but let's just, you know, I guess assume that it is and take preventive measures to the extent that you can.
Better to be, I think, a little conservative.
You know, at least with the virus seemed to have a predilection for the nasty bacteria that reside in people's guts, Clostridium. You know, thing, just the nasty stuff, not the lactobacilli, not the bifido. Mm-hmm. Those are the beneficial bacteria. And so sometimes it's possible to win the game, so to speak, through competitive inhibition. If you can selectively feed the good bacteria, they can crowd out the bad bacteria. And many bacteria, beneficial bacteria, produce antimicrobial peptides that kill off the bad bacteria or make it difficult for them to grow. And so fucoidin will do that as well. It's a prebiotic which will selectively feed good bacteria and also bind the spike protein. So you get a double whammy there.
Okay.
But the other, you know, you could be taking things like FOS, fructooligosaccharides, and XOS, xylooligosaccharides. Those will selectively feed good bacteria. Guar gum, also known as sun fiber.
Guar gum is an ingredient commonly found in processed foods.
Yeah, it's a thickener.
Right.
So it's a type of soluble fiber, and so that will give you some advantage to hopefully not be colonized by bacteria that are harboring this plasmid. But, you know, this is all speculation right now. We don't really have proof of anything, but it is a concern.
Right.
And these people who have never had the vax that are, you know, testing positive for antibodies to spike protein and believing that it's coming from shedding, you know, other people, another concern is, are they producing spike protein through their own bacteria?
It's still on the table. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
Can't dismiss it. No. All right, we are out of time. Quick final comment, and we got to go.
That's it for me.
Okay. All right. Bedtime. Go to sleep.
All right. Happy
sweet
New
dreams.
Year, everyone. Okay. Right. Thanks, Jeff. Good night.
Bye. All right, we'll be right back with Hour 3 and a lot of information. We'll have the program up on the homepage shortly. You'll be able to listen to it again. And that is fucoidin, fucoidin. Be right back.